Michael, please close the door. I'm ready to roll. Today is Sunday, February 8th, 2015. And with great joy, I say hello to my wonderful students in front of me and the many virtual students over the world. I want to dedicate this shiur today in memory of a great lady, Miriam Reisel, bat Rav Moshe Dov, her son is a virtual student, David Newman, Cleveland, and it's a remarkable story of a family that resuscitated and helped take Yiddishkeit after the Holocaust, and Baruch Hashem, a family lekaved ulitiferet. And today is her first yahrzeit, the neshamas al haben and aliyah. Let me just say, it's today, this coming Sunday, 19 Shvat, is my mother's first yahrzeit, Allah Shalom. So the neshamas al haben and aliyah. I just want to mention someone corresponding with the kollel asked me an interesting question, and he evidently has trouble reading my handwriting, so I have to apologize, but I just have to mention, the world doesn't understand the pressure we're under here. We once had a wonderful secretarial staff. Years ago, three people were let go, and only Sherry remains, and she's not really a secretary. She's really a receptionist, and I just can't ask her to type out everything I write. But I just want to answer him orally, because the question is a good question. He asked me, Avraham Avinu, who pleads for the Rishayim in Sodom and Gomorrah, pleads with God not to destroy the city, 50, 40, 30, 20, 10. And yet when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells him, Gei Yezaracha, and how many hundreds of years, and he doesn't plead, don't make it so many years, make it less, less, less. We wind up 210 years, but why didn't he plead? And I want to tell you, asking me the question, I'm not the right address. It's not my expertise. What I'm an expert in, I'm more than happy to tell you, ask me. Here, I'm one darshan like many other darshanim. But I do want to answer the question. I think it's a wonderful question. And the answer I can give, there's darshanut in this, I could give for weeks. But kitzen im ratz, we had to be in Egypt for two reasons. One, the suffering that we experienced in Egypt forged us into a nation. And only Am Yisrael, only a nation, we've spoken about this, and the Rav spoke about this many times, only a nation can receive the Torah, can receive Eretz Yisrael. Individual Jews cannot do it. To be an Am, you have to be forged into a people, and this is the Korban Pesach. That's what it's symbolic of, that after so many years of slavery, the Jews knew that they can only depend upon each other. And that's why hundreds of people would combine to get one little kezayit out of the Korban Pesach. It's A second reason, of course, is something I've spoken about many times. I told you, it's my vort that I heard many years after I preached the sermon for Rabbi Goldstein. I told you, I heard the Rav give the same vort in Moria. So if you quote me or you quote the Rav, it's a toss-up. We both hit the same idea. I'm humbled, but the same idea exactly. That being in Egypt was the first time we were exposed to alien culture. And how do we remain good Jews with alien culture pressing upon us? Look at the problems we have today in the United States, in England, in France, in any country, in the state of Israel, where we have a dominant general culture in addition to the Jewish culture, the Torah culture. And in Egypt, Ephraim and Manasseh became the prototype how a Jew could live in an alien culture and remain totally committed to the heritage of their forefathers. And this is why we bless kids Friday night, Yisimcha b'ni ki Ephraim u'Menashe, not like Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, because these were the first children to live under alien culture, with a computer, and they succeeded in remaining good Jews. And we say to our children, we don't know where you'll be in life, but wherever you'll be, whatever influence will be upon you, retain the commitment to your forebears, your forefathers, your heart of peoplehood, Torah Hashem Tamima. So that's a brief answer to a beautiful question. Now, in relation to last week, we spoke, we're still today with the Smechim L'Shamro, and it's just amazing how many reasons Reb Moshe Mendel will find why we need an Erev. But among the reasons we spoke about last week, one was very fascinating, the wearing an abakamphis on Shabbos. Are you allowed to wear an abakamphis? What kind of beged is this? What kind of shir does it have? What kind of tzitzit does it have? And this way, if you have an Erev, there's not going to be a problem of carrying on Shabbat. And we spoke about the fact that the Briska have a tradition that Rav Chaim didn't wear an abakamphis on Shabbat. He was chayshesh for tiltul. He was chayshesh that you're not allowed to wear an abakamphis. And people raised the question, did the Rav wear an abakamphis on Shabbat? What?
Same question comes up by sleeves, I've heard, that people don't hold their sleeves up because they're afraid of
tilting. That would be an easier question to deal with, because when it comes to sleeves, even if you roll them up, but nevertheless, it does serve a part. It's part of the beged, so you're not using it all the way down, but you're using it partially. It would be less of a shayla. I'll tell you something in a second relating to that shayla. But I just want to tell you, I got two very fascinating emails. One from Nachum Lam, which I want to quote from Ilan Riza. I believe he lives in Washington Heights, unless I'm mistaken, but he lives in the States, in the New York area. And I believe he's from a Yekka family, but I can't be certain. But anyway, let me just quote from Nachum Lam. Nachum Lam, who grew up in Kew Gardens Hills, had a friend that I've met, Rabbi Seth Mendel. Rabbi Seth Mendel works for the OU. He grew up in Boston. He was a Talmud of Maimonides, knew the Rav very well, and is a great expert in meat, in slaughter and heksher of meat, and he's one of the big people in the OU today in Kashrut. And he tells a story about... He tells the following story, that this is Nachum Lam speaking, that he attended a conference the other day and he heard Rabbi Yaakov Meir Soloveitchik, or Meir Yaakov Soloveitchik, the Spanish-Portuguese synagogue speak. You all know him. In any event, he described how growing up there was a whole little ritual in their house every Friday afternoon, when they took their tzitzit off, because brisket tradition is that you can't wear a talit katan on Shabbat. So at least one branch of the brisket still does that. Okay, so we now about Rabaran Soloveitchik and his children. Then he tells about Seth Mendel, who grew up davening and with and following the Rav very closely. He had a double problem. When he lived in Kew Gardens Hills, he didn't use the Erev, but also waited much longer than the rest of us for Shabbat to be over. Remember, we once spoke about that, the 1/8 that they add on, even beyond the sheet of Rabbeinu Tam. So if he has this double chumrah, he couldn't carry his talis home on Matzoy Shabbos, because the shul closed at the regular time. He didn't wear the talit, because he didn't want to be seen as if he was protesting the Erev, which he wasn't. So one of us would carry his talit home for him when he would need it. In other words, if he needed the talis for the next morning, whatever the reasons are. So imagine a Shabbos guy, after Shabbat is over, Miman of Shach. He can't carry the talis because he holds the chumras of the Brisk family, and the Nachum Lam or some other friend would carry the talit for him. An interesting comment. However, the problem about the Rav is solved. A volume appeared, and this I thank Ilan Reese, I actually have the volume at home, a volume appeared, Mentors of Generations. It's reminiscence about YU, people who studied there. and people who know about YU. It was originally this article, many of these articles were published in the commentator, and then they were put together in a book. And I believe Aleph, the name of the person who edited it, is Taka related to Nachum Lehm, Rabbi Aleph, if I'm pronouncing his name right. Dr. David Lukens relates the following memory, and I quote, "We were learning a diyuk Reb Chaim had at a Rambam by which tzitzis bisman hazeh without chelis was not a full kiyum in the mitzvah, and therefore the white threads on the beged might be considered a masai, carrying on Shabbos. Reb Chaim allegedly did not wear tzitzis on Shabbos outside of an Erev enclosed area. The Rav commented, my brother Abaron does not wear tzitzis on Shabbos. You have to be a tzaddik yisod olam to not wear tzitzis on Shabbos. I'm not such a tzaddik. I do wear tzitzis on Shabbos." So I think the issue is closed now with David Lukens, I believe, is reliable. And if he relates that this is what he heard in Shir from the Rav, we can be samach on it. So halacha lemaisa, the rabbi of the Spanish Portuguese synagogue may very well not wear tzitzis on Shabbos. He's the son of Abaron Soloveitchik, but Mori Urebi did wear tzitzis on Shabbos. And this, I'll tell you, it certifies what I heard. I heard the following, that the Rav found out someone had a chumrah, he didn't wear tzitzis on Shabbos. So they asked him, why aren't you wearing tzitzis on Shabbos? And he answered, Ichtuvi Reb Chaim. So the Rav said to him, if you hold all the other chumras and diktukim of Reb Chaim, I'll understand that you're not wearing tzitzis on Shabbos. But if this is one concept you hold and the rest you don't, the Rav was not happy that he wasn't wearing tzitzis on Shabbos. All right. Anyway, there are many other reasons that he gives, and let me go a step further. We spoke last week about all the problems with medicine and medical alerts. And we all know, chas v'chalila, on Shabbos, people can get sick. People, we're the only advantage we have, generally speaking, in every shul today, there are always doctors on Shabbos. I've seen that with my own eyes, that people have fainted on Shabbos. And if you have 200 mitpalalim, 7 or 8 people jump up right away. And I was told the story in Muncie, in Rabbi Tendler's shul, that someone had a heart attack in the shul on Shabbos, and there were about 40 doctors surrounding him. And the problem was not to find the doctor. The problem was to keep the other doctors away and just let someone who was an expert in that area handle it. And even in the shul where I daven, old Rivka, I can tell you some months ago when my feet gave out under me, the meniscus problem, and I arranged an appointment with the top expert in Jerusalem, Dr. Yosef Lau. And everyone tells me, to get an appointment with him will take you months. And I had mazel on my own, without any protexia, on my own. There evidently was a cancellation. I had an appointment. I saw him at the TAM, did whatever I had to do, the MRI and the x-rays, and come back to him. But when I got to see his staff, I take a look. One of the top doctors working under him is someone I've been davening with at the same minyan for maybe 30, 40 years already. So I had the greatest protection in the world. Right in my minyan, there's a doctor who's an expert in legs and knees and the bones and all that goes with it. And Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Belkin changed the world. You have no idea. When Einstein was established, it changed the world for frum boys to become doctors. And then the other medical schools got jealous of Yeshiva, of Einstein, and you're now having top medical schools, Show Me Shabbos programs, Show Me Shabbos internships. So Baruch Hashem, despite the fact that today YU was desperate to get rid of Albert Einstein, over the years it accomplished great, great things. Now, he raises another problem. This problem is, again, halacha lemaisa. What do you do if you're a mohel on Shabbos? What do you do if you're a mohel? What do you do? So you'll say to me, Rafi will say to me, bring the clay mila before Shabbos and leave it there. All right? Tell me, what do you do if you have 2 britot on Shabbos?
two circumcisions. Excuse me?
Tzorchei
mitzvah, you're allowed to carry? What are you talking about? Are you paskin like Rebbe Eliezer? Rafi, you know what you just said? Let me tell you a true story. I tell this to you with tears in my eyes. When I became rabbi in suburban Philadelphia, right across the border, Lower Merion, in 1961, so there was a Brit I went to in Winfield, and the mole drives up in an automobile, a big, beautiful car, on Shabbos to do the Brit Milah. And I say to him, and I know the family, I mean, this mole, may rest in peace, I don't want to mention the name, maybe the tshuva. So he tells me, he paskins like Rebbe Eliezer. There's only one problem, you know, tzorchei chachanat, machshirei mila. Let me use the proper term. The Gemara in Shabbos, it's it's like you're telling me. I always tell a story which I made up. It's the only story I fabricated because I want to drive a point home that BMT. The only time I was in a lot in 1970. I was adjusting to Israel and I was tired, I felt tired. So I went to see a big specialist, I don't even know his name, this doctor saved my life, 1970, I was an outpatient at Hadassah, and the doctor says to me, tell me, where did you grow up? I say, New York. He says, you grew up at sea level, you're living on top of a mountain now. The only way you're going to survive here, you have to take a nap in the middle of the day, there's less oxygen here, you're more tired, you're not used to it. From that day on, I've been taking a nap in the middle of the day, and take a look, I'm alive and kicking and even creating problems for some people, at least. Don't want to go into detail there either, but believe me, I have some students who've become conservative rabbis, and it hurts, but we have to speak the truth. Anyway, coming back here, so he tells me, why don't you take a change of scenery now? So BMT was going to a lot. So I told Rabbi Hurwitz, the dean, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, I want to go with the boys. So I go down to a lot, and we slept on the beach. We pitched tents. It was a different world. Not today. These guys go down to a lot last week. What are they, in a four-star hotel? Where were they? Rebbeinu Shelalem. We went down to a lot. We slept on the beach. We pitched tents. We did our own cooking. So could you imagine the boys bring me chicken with butter on top of it, made French cooking, meat and milk, chicken and butter, and I say to them, gentlemen, this is basar v'chalav. They say, Rebbe, we paskin like Rebbe Yossi Haglili. You follow? Rebbe Yossi Haglili, you're in Matthias, are the same thing? No, but to bring this, so what the Mohelim used to do, I'm talking about Mohelim who Shem et Torah Mitzvah, your family had, I'm not talking about the Mohel from Philadelphia. I've gotten a lot of shilas about him because he did Geirut as well. And I've gotten endless shilas because people know, not only did I know him, but I know the family. And I was rabbi there, 61, 62. So I always tell them the halacha that you Geirut, I don't want to be criticized for being, what was the word, flippant, that's the word they used in Ami, I'm flippant. I don't want to be criticized for being flippant, but be aware I gave over a year of Sheirim on Geirut. I hope it's on the website, it's years ago, but I can't go into detail now, I'll stop teaching what I want to teach. But I always tell people, I quote the Rav, I had a similar shaila. So Rebbe said, again, you have to know the lumdus behind it, but Rebbe said, I can't say he didn't do anything, but it's not complete. So I always tell people, if you had a geirut like this that's questionable, go to mikveh with a beis din, and without a bracha, and just do the mikveh again with kavan and with kabbalat mitzvah, that's all, you don't make a bracha, and there's no problem whatsoever. With a woman, I always had this shayla, and I'd always tell her the first time you go to mikveh, when you get married, you go with a beis din, and without a bracha on geirut, the bracha is on tefillat mikveh for the first time. So you should know that this lady, who was my student in the early, in 71, 72, those 2 years, she taka listened to me. Her father was not Jewish, her mother was. And she was chayshish, for she was a big lumedet. She would be already ordained by Rabbi Riskin today. He ordained 5, she would be the 6th. She was a very learned lady. And she was chayshish for the shita techuya, that the father determines Yiddishkeit.
So I told her, look, if it bothers you, go to mikveh with a beit din, without it, and just still go through the ritual, but it's the ravcha de milta, it's not me'ikar hadin, chas v'chalila. So she listened to me, I met her again. Anyway, I wound up teaching her son right here in this kolel. Satwi Yomu Sitz was one of my top students a good few years ago. So Baruch Hashem, a mol who's medakdek in mitzvot, He hires a guy. This is what I told you. There was a doctor in New York. I don't know when I spoke about it, but they used to call him Shabbos Friedman. Anyone, do you know the family, Adam Friedman? You know the family. So there are three generations I know of doctors in the family. The grandson is already above a b'chassid. He's a skilled medical doctor. Gave him a talanga bekeshim, a talanga bar, big beard. He returned to his roots. Chassidim, they're Chassidim from Poland. So his grandfather was called Shabbos Friedman. Why was he called Shabbos Friedman? He was not only a Shomer Shabbos, whoever heard of Shomer Shabbos doctors in the 1920s, 1930s? He had a guy who stayed with him all Shabbos, that if there was any emergency, he carried his bag. If he had to be driven someplace, he drove the car. That was a Yidat Tzaddik. So the mall has to hire a guy to go from place to place, carry the bags. So now I'll ask you, how many mohalim will be willing to give up their Shabbos, their menucha? It's enough one brit. You can leave it there to run from place to place. When you have an Erev, all problems are solved. Miller at 8 o'clock carries the bag with him. Miller at 9 o'clock carries the bag with him. By 10 o'clock he's home, eating Sudat Shabbat, and he can collapse. Another reason why you have to have an Erev. Ah, then he brings down another reason for the Erev. Also dealing with Mila. Where do we make a Brit Mila? According to Hasidic tradition, a Brit Mila made in the shul, that's the proper place for a Brit Mila, not the house. So if you wind up with a Brit Mila on Shabbos where you can't carry, you have to do it in the house. How are you going to get the food? How are you going to get the baby? All the Shabbos problems. When you have an Erev, the Brit Mila can be in the shul. Absolutely. A different world altogether. You know, by the way, you see this in the halacha. Yom Kippur, when do you make the Brit Mila? Rosh Hashanah, isn't it brought down in the Shulchan Aruch? At what point in davening do you make the Brit? The Brit is right in the shul. Could you imagine? On Yom Kippur, right in the shul, there's the Brit. But that's the place to make it, lachatchila. I'm not saying you can't have a Brit in the house. A Brit in the house, Baruch Hashem, is just as good as the kid is gemalt. That's all that counts. Huni molachshav. But for the ceremony, for the kedusha, for the feeling, for the sanctity, the shul is infinitely better. Then he has another point. I mean, his mind is golden. Rabbi Mendel, I haven't met you, but I'm a great admirer of a seminal mind, a litvak, you understand. What we loved about the Rav didn't have Rabban, you fellas don't know Rabban Lichtenstein, unfortunately. The Rav didn't have Rabban's memory. Rabban knows all of Shas al Hadaf. The Rav would quote a Gemara, but he'd say to Rabban, who is that Gemara? What is the Daf? He knew, Mesechet Psachim, what Daf? Mesechet Shabbos, what Daf? Aaron had a mind, all of Shas was in front of him. Unbelievable photographic memory when it came to Shas. All of us were sat in the Rav in the 50s into the 60s, early 60s, when Rabbaran was sitting there, right over there. Do we all remember? When we get together, we recall, what a mind. The Rav didn't have a mind like that, but the Rav had a very seminal mind. Any Rabbaran Soloveitchik, I once had a whole conversation with him about what was unique about his brother, my Rebbe. And Rabban said, anything he touched, he was machadesh. Anything. By the way, Chaim, my classmate, Dr. Grach, whatever name you know him by, Rabbi, Dr. Professor Chaim Soloveitchik, Chaim Alevi Soloveitchik, He has a mind like this. Anything he touches. You see his article on rupture and reconstruction. That's an article of a sociologist. Where does he come to it? Do you see the chiddush in that article? Because that's Chaim. Anything he touches, mechadesh. He gave a shiur in yeshiva at one time after his father, but it couldn't last because he's too much of a perfectionist. He hasn't made his peace with the reality of the world. He never married. When you don't marry, it's a Gemara in Sanhedrin. If you don't have children, you can't be in the Sanhedrin. You can't be in the based on HaKadol. You're Al-Zari. What does it mean, Al-Zari? You see black and white. You see that in Israel today. Rav Shmuel Orbach never had children. He's married to an American woman, you should know. He probably knows English very well. Married to an American lady. She died young, relatively young. He never remarried. If you don't have children, you see, as that kid told me, maledicting, why you, Isaac, black and white. The kid, remember I told you in Florida, I saw last time I was in America, I saw Hasidim in YU. Now I met a kid from YU and he tells me his friends too, they're angry at the institution, they don't allow them to bring their girlfriends up to their dorm rooms. That's what they're angry. And he uses the word, he taught me a new term, too many black and whites around. Oh my gosh. But I didn't argue. Let me tell you, Alex, when you know you're lost, you're lost. You understand? There's a time to dialogue, and there's a time just to keep your big mouth shut and let them rave on. Yes, I told you, without me, people ask me, why don't I respond? Why do they want to respond? I said, no one should respond. It's a different world. We think differently. Dialogue is not possible. Black and white. All right. Is it better than I used to hear the term blackies? They used to call them blackies. Which is a better term? Blackies or black and white? Black and white sounds like chess pieces. You follow? But when you take the machlokhtat in the Litvishu world, in Rav Orbach, you see again this problem. If you don't have children, if you don't marry, you don't know what the word compromise means, you're very self-centered. Bishvili nivra ha'olam. If you go with the shita, bishvili nivra ha'olam, you'll never be a good Rebbe, you'll never be a good Malamed, you'll never be a good husband, you'll never be a good father. Shem Yerachim. Anyway, it's a very similar mind, Rabbi Mandel. Watch what he does now. And this is, I'm overwhelmed. Look, have you walked around Borough Park? Walk around Borough Park. So you'll notice, and walk around like a lady. My wife, women different than men, they walk around, they see things, they see trees, they see plants, they see houses, they see designs, they see an extra window here, an extra mirpeset here. What's a mirpeset in English? A balcony. You've lived in Israel too long when you think the words come to you in Hebrew and not in English. Baruch Hashem, 46 years here, and Hebrew, the language has affected my ability to speak English. Baruch Hashem. So you see mirpasot, fine. You walk along, so I have what I see is halachic. I'm not interested in if there's an extra window or the tree is beautiful. What can I tell you? Yeah, although, according to the Mishnah, you should appreciate a nice tree. So you look, you see, I say to Malka, hey, look. They put an Erev up in their backyard. You see the string, you understand? Backyard, you see the Tzurat HaPetach, right? Okay, the typical Erev. Like I told you, you can see an Erev when you went to Rehov Diskin. You look up, there's the Erev, because in Israel, we'll talk about it probably next week, they're Erevim within Erevim within Erevim. I think this area here has three Erevim around it. Ask Rabbi Miller. I think there's a private Erev surrounding Machon Lev, and then there's the Eda Charedit Erev, and then you have the city Erev, which of course is much larger. So you see here, hi, another backyard. So Rav Mandel tells the story that many people came to him and they would ask him or ask an expert in Erev to look at what's up in the backyard. And time and again, the people who put up the Erev didn't know how to make a proper Erev. And the advantage of putting up a communal Erev is that you bring in experts. Once you bring in experts, They know how to make an Erev. And this becomes very important. And this is what I told you time and again. You take Melbourne. I was very impressed in Melbourne. No machloket, everyone except there. We'll talk about it in more detail because there's a sideshow to this. But they told me there was a big machloket over the original Erev. They brought in my chaver, Rabbi Shimi Aida, Zeichet Tzadik Livracha. And no one, when he made tikkunim and said this Erev is good, no one will argue with Shimi Aida, of course. So YU product? He's a Lakewood product. After YU, he went on to Lakewood. He was very close to Reb Moshe Feinstein. You can't argue with him. The man knows what he was doing. He was a Yorei V'Shalem. So when you make a community Erev, you have an expert. I told you, in America, the expert on Erev, Dafka, was from Cleveland, the Helmut Zerebi, I think he was called. He went all over America in the 70s, the 80s, I don't know when he died, but he was the expert they called in wherever an Erev had to be built. Okay, so there's another reason why you should have a community Erev constructed under rabbinical supervision by Rabbanim who are experts in the field of Erev. Then he goes a step further, and this is a problem that some of you already have. I hope that all of you will have this problem. You go walking with a kid on Shabbat. Okay. You go walking with the kid on Shabbat. And this kid gets tired. And you know, a kid, a year and a half years old, you can't reason with. He's not yet learning Gemara. He's not yet, it's not Otskrol. Otskrol probably has kids a year and a half, bucking shas, sits it out, keep it on their head. This kid has a long way to go yet. Now what do? The kid sits down on the floor, refuses to budge. Everyone has had this with children. Well, when you don't have an Erev, you got a real problem. Even though we say chayno seyet atzmo, but lachatchila, you're not allowed to carry a kid on Shabbat, plain and simple. So he tells a story here where this actually happened, and it was his neighbor, and the neighbor had to ask a guy to carry the kid home for him. No, you got to be lucky to have good guy, to have Elvis Presley around, who it turns out was Jewish, but you got to be lucky to have Colin Powell was a Shabbos guy. He grew up in the East Bronx. He knew Yiddish. He spoke Yiddish. I told you when he met Shamir, when he got off the plane, the Secretary of State of the United States of America, formerly Chief of Staff, right? He was Secretary of State, am I correct? And formerly Chief of Staff, or was he Secretary of Defense? You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I remember it was headline news in Israel. Got off the plane. Yitzhak Shamir, who really had no, his connection to Yiddishkeit was nebulous at best. His connection to Israel, to the Jewish people, was 100%. But he knew very little about Yiddishkeit. And he gets off the plane and he meets the Prime Minister of Israel and it's for V'zaitmin, Zait Gizun, Zalachem V'seris Taivas. And he speaks perfect Yiddish to the Prime Minister, whose native language was Yiddish, by the way. And Shamir was blown away. V'kumtasak, how do you know Yiddish? But imagine, you have to ask a guy, if you have an Erev, problem solved. And fabulous. All right, now you're in for a treat. Now you're in for a treat. Hi, gentlemen. Have you ever been on a diet? Rabbi Rubin, who's not here, but let me quote, Michael, tell this to you, that I'm quoting his father-in-law, Rabbi Philip Goodman. He had a very chashuv of father-in-law, mismach of the yeshiva from the early, early years, from Rabbi Moshe Soloveitchik, from Rabbi Revel. His father-in-law wrote many books, Judy's father's, a different generation.
Every Jewish holiday,
treasury, Hanukkah treasury, Purim treasury, Passover treasury. What wonderful, wonderful people.
You got to know him. He was still living.
You got to know him. Oh, wonderful, wonderful people.
He lives on the third floor of our building.
Right. Correct. Wonderful people. So I yet knew his mother-in-law, Judy. Judy was Malka's classmate. I mean, we go back a very long way. So Rabbi Goodman once said to me, I don't know, he was in his 80s already. He says, "You should know, Arnie, I no longer diet. I've gone through so many diets in my life to lose weight," he says. "Now I'm in my 80s. I want to eat what I want to eat. I want to enjoy the food I want to enjoy." No, he said a good word. "Tell me, you're in a diet. Shabbos comes. Oh my gosh, there goes the diet. Friday night, they bring over cake with chocolate, with cream, with powerful whipped cream. Shabbos morning, I need not tell you, Kiddush, Cholin, which I personally don't understand. How you can have a Kiddush with Kugel and Cholin and everything, and a half hour later, you're sitting down to a meal with Cholin and Kugel, and there's a lady who converted to Judaism. She had been a nun. I was involved in her conversion. So I asked her after she converted, she was married to a dear student of mine. I miss him. He died young, and I miss him. Let me mention his name, Avi Shafran, Zichrono Livracha, from the coast. So after she converted, I asked her, how do you feel about being a Jew after being a nun? She said, "I'll tell you, there's one big difference. The food that Jews consume," she says. "Shabbos morning," she says, "Kiddush, and what a Kiddush, and a Sudashniya, and Sudashli shit." And she said a good vart. What do they have in a church? A little wine, a little wafer, and this is out. And ba'unz. So what's your answer? So your wife says to you, "I thought you're on a diet. I thought you have to lose weight. The doctor told you this, that." Isaac, your answer is Onek Shabbat. Right or wrong. Kibbutz v'onek, Shabbat is Shabbat. I Beit Shammai, Beit Hillel, the Gemara in Beitza, the Ramban in Chumash, Ribbono Shel Olam, he got it. Brooklyn, what's it called? Coney Island Knish shop opened up. We went there. Talmud told me about it. I went there Friday. The donuts are better than anything I've ever. Malk and I both agreed. It makes Dunkin' look cheap, second rate, and they're parv. Get the chocolate cream donut parv. You don't have to eat anything else. You make Kiddush, Lechem Mishnah, that donut with a chveis, a good cup of coffee or a good glass of cola in your case, and boy, you have an Onek Shabbat second to none. No, what happens if you? Something went wrong, and he gives a whole list here. Suddenly you discover Shabbos, you're missing a matzah for Lechem Mishnah. By the way, that's happened. My daughter once ran over to my house. I always had matzah. So you need Lechem Mishnah. Second, here's a matzah. What if you're missing onions? Tzibalach, that's a Hasidic tradition. Minest, it's tzibalach with eggs on Shabbos. Chalin, chalav, coffee, tzukah, it gives a whole list of things. You can borrow from a neighbor, but you need an Erev. Without an Erev, it affects and intrudes upon Onek Shabbat. And now he tells a story. Harabanit hatzadik hatzadikat eshet chaver kvod kedushato Admoni Vishnitzitzal, Baal Machabe Sefer Imre Chaim. I believe who he's talking about here is the wife of the grandfather of the present Vishnitzer Rebbe. Okay? It's the Imre, it's the Imre Chaim. I believe that's the grandfather. And you can imagine already who this lady was, the Rebbetzin. And she's visiting Muncie on Shabbos Kodesh, and she asked her host if they have livers, chicken livers, for her to eat. And the host didn't have. And thank God there's an Erev in Muncie. And they went from neighbor to neighbor until they found a neighbor who had chicken liver and gave them chicken liver for the Rebbetzin. No? a cynic would ask a question, right? Where's Rabbi Reuben? Rabbi Reuben, no, watch, you had to make a fuss over chicken livers, and if she wouldn't have liver ein Shabbos, it's not the end of the world, and to run to neighbors. What are we being told here? You know why it's so important to eat chicken livers on Shabbos? What do you call them in Yiddish? Lebelach. Lebelach. They have a tradition. Lebelach means leib erlich. Live piously. If you eat chicken livers on Shabbos, it is giving you a message. Live piously. Part of the Oneg Shabbos. Live piously. Wow. Beautiful. Chicken liver. No, you get older. Cholesterol. Who can eat livers? But I'll let you in on a secret. They make it in America, but somehow in America it doesn't equal what they make here. You all know with chumis and tahina and all. So there's liver kaved made from eggplant, parv. You buy that and add two eggs and maybe a drop of mayonnaise, and if you can taste the difference between that to real chicken liver, I will give you a prize. Be'ezrat Hashem. It is fabulous and no cholesterol, but there's only one problem. The leib min erlich, it doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. It doesn't apply. Anyway, beautiful, beautiful idea, beautiful story, a beautiful story, the Mishnah Serebetzin. Wow. By the way, the Imre Emes's daughter or sister is the wife of Rabbi Yisrael Friedman, the Rebbe in Gilo, who's the first Rebbe in the world to wear a kippah shrugah under his shtreimel. So you have here, what a family, Haga family. What came out of that family? If you're following Israeli politics, one of the big guns behind Yishai's party, the new party, is a full colonel in the IDF, Haga, a nephew of the previous Fishtitzer Rebbe. It's an amazing family. Wow. Every type of Jew is in that family. Then he comes in. The whole question of walking with a cane. And this is a very difficult question where there's no Erev. Me'ikah hadin, if you really need the cane to walk because your legs are not working, yesh makom lahakel. If you need the cane only for support or for fear something might happen, you have a tremendous halachic problem. I told you that a Jew walked in with a cane to the monk shul in London, and this people swore to me happened, and they gave him an aliyah. And the rabbi, when he found out what happened, and this man didn't actually need a cane, it was only to make him walk more easily, but he didn't really need it. Me'ika hadin, he was not someone who couldn't walk without a cane. The rabbi laying the whole pasha over again after the shul was finished, because he was chayshesh derat yotzei, that they gave an aliyah to a machalo Shabbos, who is so meich on the Erev. What about ice? Last year we had a terrible snow here. For days I walked around with a cane. Why? To protect myself when I had to walk in snow, when I had to walk on ice. If it snows this week and they claim I'm getting stirrut from my children. Some children say they say snow, Thursday, Friday, Shabbos. Some say only rain. And I say, let's live and see, because the weather forecasters, you know, they're only as good as their equipment, and the Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world, as we all know, as we've all seen. So, can you walk with a cane where there's no Erev? And here he says
The greatest thing is to build an Erev, mitzvah lasot Erev, kedei limnoet tzar habriyot, v'kein kedei lekayem mitzvot onek Shabbos. And you must have an Erev. People can take a cane, don't have to worry, don't have to shake, don't have to shiver, don't have to question whether or not they can use the cane. Onek Shabbos, livers, chickens, whatever you're missing, onions, whatever you want to borrow, sugar, cake, guests arrive unexpectedly. You have something in your neighbor's freezer, take it out. When you have an Erev, no problem whatsoever. Okay? Then something we alluded to, he goes into more detail, this you'll find on page 84, 85. He quotes the Gemara, Psachim Daf Kafiralev, but it's brought down already. The Poskim, are you allowed to walk between two women? Sheyishaver ben shnei nashim, v'kein ishaho vered ben shnei nashim nechshavim ben hadavarim shekashim lelimud. For who adin over ben shnei gemalim kashel lelimud? You'll see all the sources here. You can check it all out. Shulchan Aruch ben Ish Chai. By the way, Rav Ovadia Yosef was asked this question. And, walk between two women. Now you know at El Al Plains what happens where you have a chassid seating between two women. They start changing seats. It's a problem. It's a problem. Sitting between two women where you are clamped together like sardines, it is a problem, I have to say. Particularly people fall asleep on the plane and they fall on top of each other. It is a problem. I'm not paskening la halacha. It's, obviously I hope it's b'li tava, but I can understand the charedim or the chassidim who are mocked with the changed seats. Other people get very angry. Hadrat nashim. There's a lot of anti-Torah propaganda out there on the streets, but this is the reality. But walk between two women. So Rabbi Ovadia Yosef answered, I don't know, again, you have to check it out if it's in writing. He said, this does not apply if the women know how to learn Gemara, if they're intelligent women, if they've learned. All right, it's a nice answer. I don't understand what that means exactly. I don't know. I can't answer you. But it seems there was a tradition, if you have a cane with you, then it's like a machitza. You're not walking between two women. Because there's Rachel on one side, Aaron in the middle, his cane on the left side, and Leah beyond the cane. So he paskins lahalacha that absolutely build an Erev. Kidei sheyachlu lelechet, we would say in Matna Hebrew, in makel b'shabbos l'mnoah sakanot, ulatzorach min hagim tovim hanomal la'el, what we spoke about before. You can walk between two women, between two cattle, between two camels, whatever Chazal said, with the cane, you have no problem. On page 85, he has an even more fascinating story. And he tells the following story. Someone told Rabbi Mandel that he studied in a yeshiva in a small village in Europe, and the home he stayed on was quite a distance from the yeshiva. Now, you all know what that means. In the yeshiva in Europe, you basically did not have dormitories. When you talk about Mir, when you talk about Slabodka, you're not talking about dormitories. People rented rooms throughout the city. So he rented a room and had to walk to the yeshiva. Hayusam shkatsim, shayuman aplim aleihem. There were non-Jews, shkegets, in Yiddish, mzata shkegets, shkatsim, that would start up with them. But when he went with a walking stick, no one would start up with him. All he had to do was wave the stick at them, and they didn't touch him. So here, Another reason that would this apply in New York, I think if you waved the stick at someone trying to attack you, it would just lead him on, Mishaset Akelev, I don't know. But in Europe, he says, this saved him, and absolutely build an Erev so they can walk on Shabbos with a stick and not have a problem. Then he goes into the whole story that I've written about in Washington. What I've written about in Washington, I went to Chabad for Shabbos, and Shabbos morning, they say we have to go to mikveh, and I'm arguing, how can you go to mikveh? How can you go to mikveh on Shabbos? How can you be tovel? How can you dry yourself off? How can you wash your entire body in water? And while I'm arguing, they push me into the mikveh, and you have a lot of sheilat afterwards. How do you dry yourself? What about if you're wet? What about the water? What do you do with the towel? And he says there are even shita that if you walk out with water in your hair and there's no way to perfectly dry your hair, even if you dry like this, in other words, you don't press it out with this shita, but you tap it, there's no way to perfectly dry your hair. You're carrying water. He says, build an Erev, no problem carrying. You can take your towel, you can come out of mikveh. B'menuchat ha-nefesh, another reason why you have to build an Erev. Now we come to a very fascinating problem. Let me just see, we have a minion here, please. You have to leave, but we'll still have a minion. It doesn't matter. Moshe, keep charge that 10 bodies remain in the room. Okay? Yomo, I want to ask you a question. You've lived in New York. Everyone gets the New York Times at one point. No? You get the New York Times on Shabbos. Are you allowed to read it? Are you allowed to read it? It's a very interesting question. It's a number of problems involved here. One problem is it mukta? It didn't exist before Shabbos. Or, on the other hand, print is really ain't b'mamish, it's nothing. How can it be mukta? It's nolad. Maybe it's not nolad. The paper exists before Shabbos. It's an interesting question. Then there's another problem. The guy did malacha for you. He printed it for you. So then you have to know. 800,000 people buy the New York Times daily, let's say. How many are Jews? How many are Goyim? Have you ever thought about, you turn on your computer, 10 o'clock Saturday night, and you switch on QXR or WINS. You want to hear classical music. You want to hear news. Hey, who's broadcasting? Are these Jews or Goyim? It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay? One of the biggest mistakes I ever made in my life was a lady who had studied with me in Mechala, this goes back many years, called me Shabbos afternoon from Borough Park. And I told her, how can you call Shabbos afternoon? Hang up. Then I realized she has mental problems. She can be committing suicide because I didn't speak with her. You follow me? It's a big mistake on my part. Anyway, it was not easy. It was before phoning was so simple. Rabbi Kukman finally tracked down her parents on Sunday, and later she was institutionalized, Lo Aleinu. I don't know what became of her, where she is today, but I remember her well. But problems, second generation Holocaust, terrible problems. So it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, Shabbos. They're broadcasting. Who are they broadcasting for?
You say you're listening here.
Yeah, you're listening here, 10 o'clock at night. What's the Shiloh? After Havdalah, I turned on my computer last night to see if we're alive, that's all. Interested, you turn on BBC, you see what the headlines are, you know whether Israel's alive, you know, or Baruch Hashem, the world is killing each other, but we're alive and kicking. There was no news about Israel after Shabbos. It's the best sign. When there's no news, the news is all about London and Paris and Washington and now Jordan. Jordan boasted today how many Islamic state people they have killed. Can I inherit? Let them continue the good work. So, a big shaila. So I have to tell you, what about if the paper, it's not for Jews, the majority are Goyim, And we're not choshish for nolad. But someone delivers the papers on Shabbos. He's carrying it where there's no air of that. Itself is another shayla. Excuse me? So he says, if there is an Erev, it will modify the problem. And I can tell you, I once was at a very chashuv bar mitzvah. One of the leaders of the RCA were there. And these were talmidim of the Rav. I'm going back to the 70s now. And believe it or not, on Shabbos morning, outside everyone's door, compliments of the host and hostess, was a fresh copy of the Saturday New York Times. So, with an Erev, mitzvah lasot Erev, biglal otam anashim shemekablim leveitam iton yomi b'shabbat. And then he raises another issue, something that didn't exist when I was a kid, when Steve Pressler was a kid, when Michael was a kid. This didn't exist. Gentlemen, one of the few things in life that became much cheaper is printing. My first book, first edition, Bernard Revel, Builder of American Jewish Orthodoxy, type was set by hand. Moshe, do you understand what I'm saying? Shmuel, do you understand? Type was set by hand. Today, everything is computerized. You give them a manuscript that goes, to me, it's magic. I can't explain all this. It goes into the computer. Within minutes, you have a 600-page manuscript ready to be bound. All right? It became cheaper. Became cheaper. You go to Shul Shabbos, Ribbono Shel Olam, in the state of Israel. You got to be a weightlifter to bring home all the free alonim, it's called, modern Hebrew, all the free Pasha sheets that are available. You get everything from Chabad to Kolech to Ponovich, on the Gemara, Litvakin, everything, every blend of Tzionit Datit, Bennett's kind, Yishai's kind. No, you get them in shul. First of all, it's very bad when you distribute them in shul, because 90% of the daveners stop davening and are reading the alonim. You just look around. Where my son-in-law is president, where I daven Friday night in the Chazon Yecheskel, the sheets are put out on the table outside the shul during the singing of Adonai, during the singing of Yigdal, I think they sing at the end of davening Friday night. You can't give it out in shul. That's very good. No, people have to take it home. People have to take it home. You need an Erev. The last thing in the world is we want to see people being Machalo Shabbos, carrying home a lonim of Divrei Torah on Shabbat. He says this is another reason to build an Erev. It's unbelievable what he's come up with. Then something I alluded to last week, Kamiyot, Skulat, a coin around your neck that a Rebbe has blessed. Ephraim, I have seen it. Are you allowed? And this is by the way, there's a lot of halachic literature on this. Who does a kamiyah? Is he a mumcha? Isn't he a mumcha? How do you know he's a mumcha? What about spices attached to your body in a little vial? These are unbelievable questions. What about Kever Rachel? Chut Adom? Mikera Rachel. It's what I told you last week. The bindle around your hand to show you paid for the ticket to hear the world famous cousin. Oh my gosh. Mitzvah to build an Erev Shelo Yikasheva Lo Yavu Al Chshash Yisur Chatzoyal the Eilach Sinosim Skulot Hein Baofim Shetuli Al Tzavaro Asaviv Yato around your hand. What about if you carry the Rebbe gave you a written bracha, it's in your pocket? You understand what a written bracha from a Rebbe means? You want me to prove to you how important it is? This question is in response to literature, the 19th century, that a chassid, all of you who are chassidim should know, a Rebbe makes Birchat HaMotzi over 12 challahs, not 2. Why 12? I mean, I don't know if Lubavitch had this minhag. And in general, the Rebbe didn't eat in public. Lubavitch already is a little different. But you go to Atish, why 12? Like a shtreimel that has 12 different furs in it. Shiftei ka, Am Yisrael. And a chassid snuck a little challah off the table of the bells of Rebbe. That was his most precious possession. He wrapped it up. I don't know if that freezes yet. And he wrapped it and he kept it. And oy vey, an umblick had them getragen. A tragedy happened to him. Pesach is coming. And Imamish asked the Shaila if he can sell the challah that he gets from the bells of Tish as part of his chametz. This is the Shaila he asked. Okay? So someone got a skula from a Rebbe. Alachat kama v'kama. He wants to carry it. It's a skula. Laricha jamim tovim. Build an Erev. Solve the problem. Oh, then he gets involved in an Elvis Presley problem. Whenever you meet a Shabbos guy, and there are many, many good Gentiles who Shabbos. I've yet to meet a Shabbos guy who was an anti-Semite. It's interesting. Many good Gentiles with Shabbos guy. Be interesting in the Holocaust literature, if anyone here is an expert in the memoir literature, does it come up that one could have been a Shabbos guy and become a Nazi afterwards? I wonder if that ever happened. I mean, in America, you have stories and stories of Shabbos Goyim who boast about, and what do they talk about? What the Jews gave them. A shtikl challah, some chalent. Remember, we have good Jewish food. No, the guy gets it. Kichlach. Kichlach you don't even have in Israel. I've yet to see. Maybe the Brooklyn Bakery bakes it. I don't know. But kichlach, you know what I'm talking about? Kichlach, how can I describe it? I've never yet seen it in Israel. It's interesting. It must be a Litvish, a Polish type of cake, and it doesn't go over here because the Eidot HaMizrach brought the original bakeries to Israel. Now already I saw the French bakery right off Emek Rephaim, corner of Rachel Imenu. I can't believe what I saw there, the French bakery with all the pastries, with the fruit. No wonder Paris has come to Jerusalem. I can imagine Ranana, Herzliya, Netanya, what's going on there. So you give the guy challah, you give the guy kichlach, you give the guy cake, rushna, mandalach, you give him all the treats. He carries it out. How's he allowed to carry? How are you allowed to have a guy... You're giving him, you're part of an Issa, all right, it's open to Machloikit. Build an Erev, you solve all problems. Then he comes up with an idea, and I tell you, I thought of this, but I never believed I would see it in writing. Watch. This Shavuot, I'm going to be in Stamford, Connecticut. What am I doing in Stamford, Connecticut? A student sat in the Sperry Kollel, a dear student of mine, who's the rabbi there. His brother was my student. His father later had a sabbatical, became my student. So he's invited me a number of times. I've been in various shuls of his. And now he's in Stamford many years. He's a Shane Dover there. So I'm going to be in Stamford, Connecticut. This Shavuos in Stamford, Connecticut, every Israeli has to blow his brains out because there's Shabbat, Sunday, Monday, Shavuot. Now, let me ask a question. What does Aaron Rakefet do in Stamford, Connecticut on Monday? And here you have a unique answer. It's one of the questions I discussed with the Rav. Many years after I was his Talmud, when I knew how to learn a little bit in 78, I had Lenin for hours, one of the main topics we discussed, among other topics. It was a moment in time for me, that Shabbat I spent in Boston. And I observed 2 full days, like every other Jewish citizen of Stamford. Am I doing right or wrong? I'm wrong and I'm right. Right and wrong. There's no way with Yom Tov Sheni that you can solve all problems. What I do, the only thing I do a little bit differently than Rafi's father, right, the rabbi, North Philly, is second day Yontif, when I come home from shul, I sneak into my room and I put on tefillin without a bracha, with a tenai. If it's chol, these are tefillin. If it's Yontif, this is a kishut, a decoration, a medal of honor that Ratefet is wearing, and then I say Kriyat Shema, and then I sneak the tefillin off, and I sneak back to everyone else.
Would you be a Kiddush and all that?
Kiddush, davening, like every other good Jew on the Upper West Side. Got it? Am I paskening for you? Only if you ask me. If you ask me, I'll give you the lumdis. But that's what I have to do. I spoke with the Rav. This is the psak of Reb Chaim, the Chacham Tzvi. Understand? This is, I can't play games. And by the way, the psak makes a lot of sense today.
But the tefillin is just to be choshesh for the other.
Yeah, that's lechumra. It's like someone coming here and not doing malacha yantav sheni, but at least you put on tefillin for sure. You follow? Or even if you're observing a full yantav sheni, Reb Shlomo Zalman Paskin to put on quietly. It's a big problem, but I personally am convinced that the Rav stand, the Chacham Tzvi, is absolutely right. Because we're all citizens of two worlds today. We go back and forth regularly. I mean, there's a lot. Again, I lectured on this for a year and a half. It's not for now.
Do you have those on my phone?
I hope so. I hope it's there. I don't know what's there, but my shirm beginning with the early 90s are on YU Torah. What I'm lacking is the wonderful shirm I was privileged to give on Nori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. That's not there, and I feel very bad. And the truth is, I wanted to do it again, but I'm so busy with the history of Torah in the United States now. Let me get this out of my system. I have a lot more to do on that topic. So, all right. Now let's talk about Yontif Sheni. Watch. You're in America. You're staying in America, or you're coming in Aliyah? I mean, in the immediate future. I can't know what you're saying.
I'm not sure.
You're not sure. So, yeah. You're not sure. So, you're in America.
But I hold by that.
So, wait, no, say to Alex. Say that. By the way, that seems to be the psak of the Alter Rebbe. I spoke about that with. I had wonderful Torah with the third Rebbe, with the Tzaddik, but it's not for now. Again, I'm not being flippant. It's just I want to teach what I want to teach. I just gotta, I feel, you know, I don't mind getting hit over the head and being called a Zionist and being called a religious Zionist and keep Ashruga, all that. But when you call me flippant, that's not fair. That's mamish not fair. That's the exact opposite. But that's a different story. So I apologize to Rabbi Frankfurter, but I take issue with him on that one word. Everything else, he can chop my head off, but not call me flippant. That's not right. Alex, watch. Sunday night, you daven mincha 1 o'clock, okay, 1:30, whatever, early mincha, and now you're going to shul for Marav, for Kabbalat Yontif Sheni. Tell me, you're carrying, you're doing Hotzah, you're carrying a Siddur, all right? What are you carrying it for? If it's still Sunday, it's chachana for chol. You follow? It's a very interesting question. The hotza'ah is an isha because at that moment you don't need it. And even if you're mate carrying on yontif, it has to be letzorech. Mitoch shehuta la'chuto hakol, but letzorech. You build an erev, there's no hotza'ah, there's no karen, there's no problem. It's a very interesting point. And I've often thought about that. When you go to shul Saturday night, you're carrying a siddur, let's say. I carry a siddur downstairs in my house because we have a minyan in the parking lot. What am I carrying the siddur for? To daven marav. It's still Shabbat, perhaps. It's Bein HaShemasha. It's interesting. There's an Arab, so it could be it mitigates. There's no Isa Chutzah. Okay? All right, there's an easier solution. If you come down with the siddur, open it up and read something right away, so you give a reason. Mitzvah lasot teirev kedei shelo yikashlu v'lo yavru aliso se malacha miyontav lechol kigonim yesh pekiso chafatzim o metaltel chafatzim bein hashmashat. Wow. Another reason. Then he goes into the whole reason of Sukkah, which I've spoken about many different times. One of the greatest aggravations of our youth was we had no Sukkah. We lived in big apartment buildings. The Bronx, this is before the Bronx was burned down, before the Bonfire of Vanities, whatever that book was called. But the Bronx was a beautiful place. You can ask Steve Bressler. It was a beautiful place to live. The Grand Concourse. Yankee Stadium. It's not like today. Today you don't have a concept of a team. It's like making a movie. You hire stars to make the movie. The Yankees have hired a whole new roster for the team. When spring training begins, I don't know one name of the players. It's not like years ago you saw Henrik, DiMaggio, Keller. Year after year, you rooted for a team. All right, the Bronx was a beautiful place. But who built the sukkah? The only place there was sukkah were in the shuls. No, how do you get your food to the shul on Shabbos? How do you? And then there used to be shtick. They would lower food down from the fourth floor with a pulley. I saw this with my own eyes. I'd be ripping the relic, others. But then in the backyard of the house, whatever little courtyard there was, you had to build an Erev. So he says, number one, if you have an Erev, it solves the whole problem of taking food to the local sukkah. Number two, how many people, what we spoke about a half hour ago, knew how to build an Erev properly? This way, if you had a regular Erev, you would be able to carry from the house to the sukkah without any problem whatsoever. So he's given more than 100 reasons why we should build an Erev in Brooklyn. Now we come to the last part of the Sefer. And gentlemen, you all have to ask a very simple question. With all due respects to Hanina Kefet, who was enthralled by Rabbi Moshe Mendel's thinking, but who are we to criticize or to contradict or to contravene Rabbi Moshe Feinstein? And of course, it all goes back to this tremendous machloket. And the last part of his sefer, I have to give him credit that he had the guts to speak out what he considered the truth. Because in our world, I don't have to tell you, with the chamramim and all that goes on, he comes out against Reb Moshe. And very strongly, very strongly. L'shitat, Sar HaTorah Maran HaGolan HaTzadik, Reb Moshe Feinstein, he now deals with all of Reb Moshe's contentions, that it's a Shuta Rabban D'Oraita, Brooklyn, 600,000 people in the streets, Tzirat HaPetach doesn't help, you need the fence around the area, highways that are open and go endlessly from one part of the city to another. He raises all these problems. And he says that Brooklyn, if there ever was a place where you can build an Erev, it's Brooklyn. And again, it comes back to what Reb Menashe Klein, and he never mentions Reb Menashe Klein. It's interesting.
He doesn't want to be put in the camp as if he's looking to pick a machloket, to pick a fight with Reb Moshe. He never mentions Reb Menashe Klein. But he says, all of Brooklyn, at least three sides, surrounded by walls, fences, the water, you shouldn't fall in. And this I can tell you with my own eyes, wherever I was in Brooklyn, when you go near the water, there are fences a lot higher than 10 tefachim. A lot higher. Even the beaches. So at the beach itself, you will not have a fence, and we'll leave out all the question of the natural area, the slope, and the incline. But before you get to the beach, you have fences. Coney Island, Manhattan Beach, Brighton Beach, the block before. You'll look, you'll see. Omeid Merubala Parutz. All right, there'll be an opening. But the fences are solid. And he's very strident here. He says, La'eita ta'yaduil rak'ir achad ba'olam she'yesh lo mechitzot v'hi Brooklyn v'alkein mutala taltel ba v'lo b'yemansi v'lo b'lekvid. And it's forbidden to carry in these other places. If there's any problem with building in Erev, it's in Lakewood, it's in Muncie, it's not in Brooklyn. And he talks about the country. No, you all know. Everyone says Borough Park is livable during the summer, not during the year. You know what they're talking about? Borough Park. There's no place to park. All year when the people are there, you can go out of your mind. It's like Manhattan. There's a famous Seinfeld episode. No place to park. During the summer, Baruch Hashem, you can find a place to park your car because everyone is up in the mountains. And up in the mountains, they're eruvim all over the place. There are highways there, open highways going from side to side, nothing intervening. How are you allowed to build an eruv? And yet everyone does it. Allah had come of a kama, you should be able to build an Erev in Brooklyn. And he says, this is on page 102, he doesn't stop. V'gamarei b'nei drak v'yushalayim einam mukafot mechitzat. Rak Yerushalayim hatika mukefet chama umutalet el sham rak betnai shehazikui hapat shal erev munach betolch chama. Very fascinating. Even Yerushalayim, how can you carry? There's no wall around it. And if you can build an erev there, you can build in Brooklyn. The only place you can carry in Yerushalayim is in the old city. But look what he says. The challah, the matzah, I should say, that you're going to use to make an Erev Chatzerot, that matzah cannot be in the Moetzah Datin and Rehov Chavatzelet. Chavatzelet's in the center of town. It's right off Kikar Tzion. It's right off Zion Square. The matzah has to be in the old city, inside the wall. So you see, if you live in the old city, there it's the easiest place in the world to carry. You need a tzirat ha-petach l'ravcha demilta. I know Rabbi Yosef Halevi Soloveitchik at one time had them put up tzirat ha-petach in many places in the old city where they didn't have before. But that's chumrah. Me'ikra ha-din, the old city of Yerushalayim, is the classic example of a city surrounded by a wall. But if they can put up in Yerushalayim, if they can put up in Bnei Brak, then they can put up in Brooklyn. And then, of course, he goes into the Mishnah Berurah, everything we spoke about a year ago, a year and more, that even the Mishnah Berurah says it's only a chumrah not to be samach on the tzirat ha-petach when we have all these shitat
and Rove Poskim, he counts up, and I showed him the Shmirat Shabbos Kehilchata, the majority of Poskim, Paskim Lahakel. And then he says something very interesting. And even if he starts talking about Ocean Parkway, and even if you claim that Ocean Parkway is Muflash, it's a highway that goes from one end of Brooklyn to the other end, but it's not without blockage. Traffic lights, you can't go freely. Not only that, they're overpasses. If you take Ocean Parkway, where it hits Coney Island, you're going under the Belt Parkway. You're going under, there's a bridge on top. If you go further down, going to Chabad, to the Eastern Parkway area, you will see the highway goes through small tunnels. The minute it is Makura, it is no longer like the Glei HaMidbar. And if it isn't like the Glei HaMidbar, which was totally open, then it is not a Rishut HaRam the Oraita. And you have to be able to understand the Hebrew he's writing here, ocean Patvei, country, this is what he's talking about, the overpasses. Okay, let me go one step further and end off. We're almost finished and we're ready to roll with Abasha Weiss with Ramat and then to Melbourne. It's very fascinating material. But I'm very proud to say we began a year and three quarters ago, and Baruch Hashem, at the end of 2 years, we've more or less will have conquered the world of Eruvin. L'tov u'l'tov. Then he says something else. And this, of course, we've alluded to, and it's part of modern life, modern Torah world, all the enmity. It hurts. It hurts to see how much energy is wasted on fighting each other when we should be united and complementing each other. But okay, Rakef, it's a kol korei bamidbar. I recognize it. He talks about these kruzim that come out. How could you dare argue with Rav Moshe Feinstein? The Agudas HaRabbanim, all the signatures. And he says, Rav Mandel says, I spoke with many of the people who signed. And they told me they really disagree with Rav Moshe. But they signed on because they felt the fear, the pressure. How can you critique Rav Moshe Feinstein? New gentlemen, tell me, give me a basic source that shows you this is totally incorrect. How does the Sanhedrin sit? How do you begin? How do you take the roll call when you have a difficult shelah, chi of mita, malkot, karet, who knows what the Sanhedrin's involved with? You begin with, nu, yomo, tell the class.
Absolutely.
Why with the youngest? So they don't have to contradict the elder Rabbanim, and they don't have to feel pressure. I can't reveal my thinking. Let's see what the great rabbis say. And then, if they don't agree with me, I'll hide my words. I'll bury my thinking out of respect. Doesn't work that way. Torah, each one has to express his opinion. We can't be hustled, or we can't be led blindly into one way or another. The beauty of Torah is that every Talmud Chacham has a right to his opinion. You have to prove it. You can't just come along and say, Zikuy HaGet, or say, Duch Litzal Yedei Shlichut. It has to be grounded. But every Talmud Chacham has the right to his opinion. And he tells the story, it was at the Gris Rabbanim, And they wanted him to sign, and he said, what you're doing is absolutely incorrect. To begin by yelling and screaming that this is Reb Moshe's opinion, and anyone who differs with Reb Moshe is an avikaris, is off the path, this is incorrect. Zot lo dakta shel Torah. So to summarize, Reb Moshe Mendel wrote a beautiful volume with over 120 reasons why there is a need for an Erev everywhere in the world, and certainly in Brooklyn. At the end of the volume, he comes back to all the halacha questions we have discussed, and he reaches the conclusion that Brooklyn is easier to build an Erev than Yerushalayim, not the old city, but Yerushalayim in general, than Bnei Brak, than all the places in the country where they have Erevim. And in today's shiur, what I love better than anything else, it's the Hasidic little soul that the Rav planted within me, or implanted within me, is lebelach. That little livers, chicken livers, it's leben elech. We should live with elechkeit. And it certainly hits home, to say the least, that the Vishnitzer Rebbetzin could be in Muncie, and Baruch Hashem, she had her chicken livers. My dear students, we'll pick up in the Sunday class right here next week and talk about destroying the Erev, and we'll sail into Rabbi Asher Weiss and into Ramat, which again is very fascinating. Gets involved with details of the army that is probably the first time it has entered the general responsible literature, not specific army halachic literature. Tomorrow, Be'ezrat Hashem, I continue right where I left off, and we go, again, I'm going to show you an unbelievable, fascinating source, and no one could ever believe this today, but it's a fact. When students were kicked out of Torah Vadas for being too rude. My young friend from London, what's your name, give me?
Sam
Bram.
Sam
Bram. Bram, B-R-A-M.
B-R-H-M.
B-R-A-H-M. Bram. Sam Bram. Do you know Chili Fachla? You don't know him. He davens in Rabbi Kinchi's shul. Do you daven in that shul?
No. I'm on vacation, so I'm probably
not. When are you going back to London? Ah, so you're here for a while. So one second, let me.
I'm not assuming you're
here. No, beside that, but if you're coming to Shia, I want to get to know your name. You're no longer a virtual Talmud. You're looking right at me, so that gives you a different status. Sam Bram, B-R-A-H-M.
Graham.
I see, Graham with a... How do you get to Bram? What is the name from?
Abrams. And the war happened.
Bram. In Hebrew, you could change it very easily. Beish Remem would be an interesting Hebrew name. Okay, if anyone wants, this David Newman, who I dedicated to Shir Mary, his mother, sent me an email, something he got on the website about checking inside the Erev. Very interesting how an Erev can become pasul from within. He deals with many of the questions we dealt with Mukaf Ledira, with an area that is wide open, a flower garden, a lawn. What about a fence first, fenced afterwards? And the person writing this, trees versus veggies, it's matters we discussed in class. Interesting. If anyone's interested, Bavakasha, the rest of the freebies tomorrow. Rafi, Bahurachum, and the Ribbono Shel Olam should give us health and strength until we meet again at 9:05 a.m. Das Vidanya.